Hello and welcome to The Climate Clinic, a podcast brought to you by the Global Consortium on Climate and Health Education. My name is Adesh Sundaresan, and I'm a doctor from University College London. In this series, Be the Expert, I'll be joined weekly by my co-host, Dr. Mark Futenik, an emergency physician from Los Angeles. Each week, Mark and I will bring you the latest headlines from climate and health research from the leading evidence-based journals from around the world. Tune in to learn about the health implications of climate change, how this is affecting us today, and what needs to be done. By the end of it, you'll know all you need to know in order to be the expert. Welcome back to Be the Expert. This is episode 12. Episode 12. How did we get here so quickly, Mark?
And Adesh, it's already more than halfway through January. 2023 is just flying by.
I'm slightly petrified. I'm just going to like blink and you're going to say, welcome to the first episode of 2024, Mark.
It might be.
So we've got a great article for you today. And over the next few shows, we're going to be looking at how climate change affects water. That could be the availability of water, scarcity, the quality, flooding impacts, so on and so forth, and ultimately the subsequent impacts on human health. So the first article that we've selected for you is a review that was published very recently in the Annual Reviews of Public Health. It first was released online in December 2022. The authors of this paper are Coral Salvador, Raquel Nieto, Sergio Vicente Serrano, Ricardo Garcia Herrera, Luis Jimeno, and Ana Vicedo Cabrera. And these authors are based at various institutions in Spain and Switzerland. The title of this paper is Public Health Implications of Drought in a Climate Change Context, a Critical Review. Now, Mark, I really like how this paper is split up. The article is split into a couple of sections. The first few look at the impact of drought on health through various routes or mechanisms, so via waterborne diseases, food insecurity and malnutrition, vector-borne diseases, cardiovascular and respiratory diseases. And then, of course, we love this, they come on to potential solutions, so prevention and adaptation measures, which we'll explore later on in the show. So just to kick things off, the first section of this review aims to find the links between climate change and drought and explore the factors that trigger or worsen droughts. And the authors make a really interesting point, Mark, that despite an abundance of hydrological and meteorological, so basically weather data over the past 100 years, we still don't have a concrete assessment of drought trends because of the lack of a common or consistent definition of a drought. We lack a homogeneous definition of what a drought means. And there are different types of drought, apparently, a variety of different types of droughts, which I wasn't aware of before reading this paper.
Yeah, Desh, they talk about a number of issues that make it really challenging to analyze the data when it comes to drought and in order to quantify the impact or to assess the trends even. And it's just key to remember that drought causes lots of other impacts, and drought also is sort of measured in the absence of rainfall. So in terms of, you know, giving it a good metric grounding, it's just difficult. So it impacts all these other factors that they tend to measure. So damage to the agriculture, to ecosystems, reductions in reservoir levels or groundwater stores, socioeconomic fallouts, let's say from, you know, again, damage to the crops. So the droughts can be classified on a variety of these impacts. But again, with the fact that we can't directly measure it, it makes it really difficult to quantify exactly. Precipitation is the main variable which affects these trends, but rainfall itself is heavily influenced by large-scale circulation mechanisms like the El Niño Southern Oscillation or La Niña in certain years. And those mask the identification of trends that are associated specifically with climate change.
Really interesting points, Mark. The authors also point out other factors besides rainfall that affect drought, the main one being an increase in temperature. So raised temperatures increases something known as atmospheric evaporative demand, or AED, and it's done this over the last few decades now. So AED increases the severity of a drought by reducing the moisture contained within soils, enhancing stresses on plants and agricultural land, and reducing stores of water and stream flow as well. And these AED increases can have a synergistic effect during periods of low rainfall. So they basically work together to worsen the effects of a drought. Now, I want to draw listeners' attention, and yep, here we go again for the gazillionth time looking at trying to describe figures to you from a review. But figure two in this review shows two world maps, and they basically compare historical trends in drought duration and intensity from 1950 to 2020 with the data from projections from models that are projecting forwards from 2020 to the end of this century for SSP 5 to 8.5 shared socioeconomic pathway scenario. And you can see that the percentage of the world which is going to be affected by mild drought under this SSP parameter is projected to go up from around 30% currently to almost 60% by the end of the century. And for areas that are going to be affected by extreme drought, this is about 10% of the world currently is affected by extreme drought, to well over 20%. So it's going to double the proportion of our planet that's going to be affected by drought by the end of the century under this scenario.
Those are astounding figures. You know, and a lot of areas are realizing that they're getting increased precipitation. And so there's this final point that I found really interesting on future drought trends, which is that there will be a reinforcement of drought severity in areas that project even a precipitation increase. So these precipitation projections for future climate scenarios show increased decadal and interannual precipitation variability. Therefore, periods of precipitation deficits are also expected in areas where precipitation is projected to increase. So more time between these bigger rainfalls. And during these periods, higher AED, as we've talked about, would exacerbate agricultural and ecological and hydrological drought severity. I've actually experienced this recently at home where there was a lot of rainfall and there was a certain amount of sort of rain collection some time when it dried up. And then when the next rainfall came, there was actually a lot more collection of water because the land had packed down and wasn't able to absorb the water on the second round. So during these periods, higher AED would exacerbate the drought severity. And this pattern has been observed in regions that show precipitation increase in recent decades, such as the British Isles and Scandinavia, which have been affected by these extreme droughts associated with precipitation deficits in between and this increased AED.
Actually, Mark, I just wanted to comment on something you just mentioned. So what you've basically said and what the authors have said is some parts of the world, it's going to rain a lot more overall precipitation-wise, but they're still going to be vulnerable, if not more vulnerable, to drought because of variability in this rainfall. Have I got that right?
Absolutely, Adesh. That's what they're saying. Just because you're not in a persistent drought doesn't mean that you won't experience the harmful effects of droughts that extend for certain periods, like a few months at a time.
Gosh, I can see where this is going. You could potentially have regions that are going to get hit by flooding and the health impacts from that, you know, affected soon after by water shortages as well and all sorts of health complications. This is going to get messy. So next, Mark, the authors go on to focus on the health impacts from droughts. And they remind us that whilst there's a lot of literature on the impacts of droughts on agriculture, the environment, so on and so forth, studies that look primarily at the effect of drought on our health have been limited thus far because drought-related health impacts are all indirect, which makes assessment of them pretty difficult. Just to quickly remind our listeners about those who might be facing increased vulnerability from the health impacts of droughts, groups that tend to be hit hardest, as we might expect, outdoor workers, the elderly, children, pregnant women, patients with chronic diseases, those from marginalized backgrounds and people from lower socioeconomic backgrounds as well. An interesting point that I'll just quickly add here, Mark, is that gender differences do exist in terms of who gets affected by droughts. In many countries, women tend to have lower access to and the control over the resources to help them cope with extreme events such as droughts. They can also suffer from lower health literacy, lower socioeconomic positions, all of which makes them more vulnerable to the health impacts of droughts as well. In some instances, women often suffer a higher work burden during drought events because they have to travel long distances in search of water for domestic uses. But you know, the authors do point out there have been some discrepancies in the literature. In some countries, men are hit harder from the health impacts of drought. So it's multifactorial, related to things like cultural differences between countries and employment modes.
So now let's dive into the specific health consequences. First, they talk about the drought influences the risk of waterborne disease through its impact on both water availability as well as on water quality. The effect of drought on water quality are complex and multifactorial, as so many things are. The reduction of stream flow and the reduction of groundwater levels during drought events favor stagnant water conditions and more pollution, such as more chemicals, metals, and solid particles in the water. One recent study they quoted from the United States even predicted an increase in arsenic exposure in domestic wells associated with drought. Nutrients and turbidity often decrease during droughts due to a lack of catchment runoff, increase in sedimentation, and the influence of internal processes. Drought events followed by intense rainfall conditions can lead to peaks, surges in pathogenic diseases, such as from Cryptosporidium, Campylobacter, or E. coli. And then warmer and more stratified water is often associated with drought events, and that promotes the growth of microorganisms, including an increase in toxic cyanobacterial blooms and a reduction in dissolved oxygen. Furthermore, drought events also are associated with an increase in salt levels due to lower dilution, in a sense, more evaporation, into the intrusion of seawater into freshwater aquifers, compromising water security. And this has been a really significant issue in low-lying countries that have a lot of farmland, you know, near river deltas, where these are now becoming salty and then, you know, really inhospitable to the crops that they're used to growing.
So something else, Mark, that happens during periods of drought is that people often turn to unsafe water for their domestic use or crop irrigation, and these poor hygiene practices come at an increased risk. Populations with lower socioeconomic status and who have limited access to basic services such as water and sanitation, often these communities are in Africa and Asia, are especially vulnerable. And I'll draw your attention to this. Currently, there are 2.2 billion people in the world that lack access to safe drinking water, and around 4.2 billion that have no access to safe sanitation, with most of these populations living in lower developed countries. And these vulnerabilities are expected to grow due to population growth and the worsening of these droughts. Prolonged severe droughts also affect power production, they disrupt our health services, and they disrupt our health services in many ways. One of the major ways is that they affect the cold chain, which is necessary to maintain medical supplies.
It's unbelievable how many people lack access to safe drinking water. Those are just unbelievable numbers. And then they move on to talk about food insecurity and malnutrition and how many people that impacts. And so they report that in 2020, about 1 in 3 people worldwide did not have access to adequate food. And nearly 12% of the world's population suffer from severe food insecurity, mostly in Africa, Latin America, and the Caribbean, and in Asia. And this is only projected to worsen with climate change by mid-century, which is not that far off. Drought events have been associated with a reduction in food supply, such as decreased crop yields, livestock, and even fishery production, and changes in the quantity and quality of household diets. In India, for instance, drought conditions were associated with a less balanced diet, resulting in a lower consumption of fruits, vegetables, legumes, and animal-sourced foods, and lower overall caloric intake, including proteins and fats, mostly due to a reduction in household income. Drought also pushes up the cost of food, which affects dietary diversity, especially for those from lower socioeconomic backgrounds. Malnutrition during childhood can have long-term developmental impacts on children who do survive, and also during the perinatal period. So pregnant women suffer increased rates of low birth weight and preterm delivery. And of course, you know, these really lead to a lifetime of health consequences for the babies that are born. As you can imagine, mental health also gets affected by low food availability. And those from rural communities and agrarian backgrounds not only have the stress from that low food availability, but the added workload and financial pressure from the poor crop yields. So in this section, the authors also touch on a number of other impacts, including forced migration in dry land rural areas of lower economic countries, the disruptions to children's education from parents who require their children to help at home or in the family business or farming, increased uncertainty about the future, and contributing to an increased risk of negative mental health outcomes.
Those are very, very shocking to hear, Mark. The effects are really, really wide ranging. As you said, they affect people. The effects of health impacts from drought seem to be hitting everyone right from pre-birth, from the perinatal period, neonatal period, all the way through to childhood, adolescence, adult life as well. And it's quite scary to hear how diverse the health impacts from drought are, Mark. Next, the authors came on to looking at vector-borne diseases and how they tie in with drought. So drought, as you can imagine, affects the transmission patterns of vector-borne diseases. These might include dengue, chikungunya, malaria, West Nile virus, and Rift fever virus, particularly in regions where vectors are endemic and the control systems are weak. The link between drought and vectors is not as straightforward as you might imagine. It's complex. Droughts can actually work both ways with these vector-borne diseases, Mark. They can either reduce the number of mosquito vectors by affecting and reducing breeding habitats, but conversely, they can also increase the abundance by creating these improvised breeding sites in man-made water storage containers that we use to store the limited water resources we have during our droughts. Drought can also affect the number of predators and competitors for these mosquito vectors, and it can often favor the abundance of vectors under re-wetting conditions or when it starts to rain again.
Adesh, here in Los Angeles, it doesn't rain that often, but when it does, one of the things I do is walk around and tip over any water that collects in a bucket somewhere, because then we get mosquitoes and we do have West Nile virus locally.
I did not know that you had West Nile virus in LA. Very, very interesting. I've seen that when I travel to India, that people often have water storage cans and containers, and you can just see the frenzy of mosquitoes that are pooling on the surface of the water there. So I also wanted to raise a point quickly, Mark, that not all vector-borne diseases are exacerbated necessarily by drought. In fact, ticks and tick-related diseases are likely to decrease under drought conditions, as ticks need wet conditions for their survival.
Finally, the authors dive into the risks for cardiovascular and respiratory diseases that are associated with drought-related hazards. And of course, these are the most common causes of death in the Western world. Drought often exacerbates the occurrence of climate and environmental factors with detrimental effects on cardiorespiratory health. Drought can actually drive poor air quality through increasing the concentration of atmospheric pollutants in the ambient air. Drought events often result from persistent atmospheric blocking and high pressure systems, which have been associated with the intensification of extreme temperatures and worsening of air quality. And as we've covered in previous Be the Expert episodes, inhalation of air pollutants induces inflammatory and prothrombotic processes, increasing the risk of illness and death, particularly in these categories. Drought combined with high temperatures has been associated with an increased risk of wildfires due to decreased humidity and stream flow and dry vegetation. These dry compound hazards have been projected to increase in the Mediterranean and continental regions of Europe and elsewhere, and they're believed to be the fuel for the recent fire disasters in the Amazon and the Pantanal in Brazil and elsewhere. These wildfires have serious consequences for our health, as we covered in episode 4 of this series. Additionally, urban environments are widely considered more at risk because they have additional sources of air pollution from road traffic and industry, and the urban heat island effect amplifying the extreme temperatures. And as we've covered in previous episodes, more and more of us are moving into the cities. Well over half of the world's population is urbanized now. Drying out of the soil during droughts can also lead to circulating dust and particles, which can affect cardiorespiratory health. droughts in combination with high winds can increase the risk of dust storms, which transport pathogenic microbes, fungi spores, and other toxic substances that create and exacerbate respiratory problems due to the irritation of bronchial passages and lungs after inhalation. And all of this increases the risk of meningococcal disease, allergies, asthma exacerbations, and respiratory infections like bronchitis and pneumonia.
Mark, prior to this, reading this article, I'd never really made the link between drought and air pollution and worsening of air quality before, and this how this might affect our respiratory health. So it was a really interesting one, actually.
It's actually one that we really experience regularly here in Los Angeles, because after it rains, you can see the mountains and the air is clear. And so you know that it's dragging all of the pollutants out of the air. And obviously they're not disappearing, but they're sort of washing out to sea with the rain. But that does clear up the ambient air for the moment.
Really interesting, because traditionally I would have mainly considered or thought about the impacts from drought being on cardiorespiratory health, being associated with perhaps an increase in the temperatures, or as we've talked about earlier in the episode, and perhaps that placing heat stress on our internal organ systems and for those with chronic conditions. But this is sort of an additional burden in terms of worsening of particulate matter, aeroallergens, and dust as well. In the final section from this review, the authors move on to solutions. So they have a look at the prevention and adaptation measures to tackle drought risk and increase the resilience of our communities. So the authors mentioned that most responses to drought are short-term, short-lived actions. And they, interestingly, Mark, refer to this as the hydroillogical response. That is hydroillogical, not logical. Basically providing resources or emergency water supplies to a crisis-affected region. And I recall when I was in Chennai in South India a few years ago, which was hit by a terrible drought. It was 2019 summer. It had a couple of years of poor rainfall from the southern monsoon, and they ended up with a day zero. I think it was either May or June in 2019. And these water tankers were bringing hundreds and thousands of liters in from neighboring South Indian states. I guess this in isolation without any future adaptation and prevention would be a hydroillogical response. Aside from the obvious that there's no preventative action that would be taken to prevent a repeat of the scenario, this action is flawed, as it's really left to a single agency to sort out, and that is ineffective. Droughts are complex, and tackling them requires a multi-agency approach. So there are several international groups that provide guidance and recommendations to move from us being reactive to droughts to more proactive about them.
Adesh, I really enjoyed that hydroillogical response concept, which makes sense. Of course, you don't have enough water in an area, so you bring in water, and that's what you're going to do. But is that really the appropriate response in the long term? And if you don't do something to take care of the issue, what have you really achieved? And so there's lots of stuff like that, and I can make parallels to medicine. It's also just amazing at how many areas are impacted. I won't go into it, but in the article, they just talked about, there were like whole paragraphs full of all of these different industries and different areas of government that are impacted by drought. And yet often it's managed by a single government department, Water Resource Board or something of that nature. And so that was really a strong point that this needs to be managed across the government, across the public agencies in a more coordinated fashion if we're going to be successful in managing our water. I also appreciated that they talked, a bit about, where's this funding going to come from? What's happening at the various COP meetings, the conference of parties that are happening around the world, discussion of damage and loss and different priorities, and it goes back to the hydroillogical response concept. When you've had these major damage events, these extreme weather events, you put a lot of money into rebuilding, but that's not really stopping the cause of the problem, which we also need to make sure we prioritize and address.
Absolutely, Mark. For many of these actions to take place in lower and middle income countries, there needs to be more funding available to move these countries away from reaction-focused drought policies. And we have to consider that because these droughts are associated with other climatic hazards as well, it needs to be an integrated drought risk management to account for the fact that the droughts don't often occur and hit human health in isolation. There's a potential for synergies between droughts and other climate related events, and countries need to be able to prepare for droughts plus one or plus two to effectively to reduce the risks on human health as well.
They also had a line that really framed it for me and I thought was powerful, when they pointed out that we're really just in the first phase of climate change, which is something to think about. And then they went on to talk about how fuel production continues unabated. You know, we're trying to cut down our emissions, but we're pumping as much fuel out of the ground as ever. And so think about the appeal of all of that available fuel as we're trying not to burn it, and the price will drop, and you know, poor countries will want to burn it. There's going to be real attraction for it. So this is going to be challenging to move forward in the way that we need to. So Adesh, on that point, you know, where we stand with current policies land us somewhere in the range of 2 to 3 times the temperature increase that we're currently experiencing. So we're at maybe 1.1 or some say 1.2, and we might end up close to the 3 range with our current policies. So just think about the amount of energy that we're talking about worldwide in terms of, you know, global temperature and what kind of impacts those have. There are changes that we can't even anticipate. You know, think about all these new terms that have become normal and well understood because they're already here. Things like the atmospheric river, which is what we're experiencing right now in California, that's causing these, you know, really record-setting rains. Well, this atmospheric river has been developing over several years. Now it's just normal. We know what it is. We know it's going to be here. The polar vortex, which again, I'm most familiar with the US, but it's shooting these freezing air waves as far down to Texas. There were negative temperatures this winter, which is really unbelievably rare because of the disruption of the jet stream. And now this phenomenon called the polar vortex and climate tipping points that we're talking about, they're already here. And yet our policies will land us at 2 to 3 times the energy in the world than we're dealing with right now.
Brings us back to the point that we need rapid climate action to decarbonize, don't we, Mark? And at the same time, there's going to be complexities and nuances to that, because as you said, when those fuel prices drop, there's going to be many, many lower and middle income countries that are going to want to dive in and use that. And it's how do we support these countries to transition away from fossil fuels during their growth phase of economic development, which is going to be one of the main challenges going forwards. I did also want to say, Mark, that in terms of future research direction, the authors identify a need to study drought-specific health effects that require a bit more attention. So some of these examples that they include are mental health disorders, infectious diseases, cardio and respiratory morbidity, and adverse birth outcomes as well. And to consider the different forms of drought and time periods in which these events occur. Like I said, before this paper, I thought of drought as one homogenous term that affected humans in a similar-ish way, but it doesn't appear to be that. This was a really comprehensive review, Mark. I really liked how the authors touched also at the beginning on the methodological challenges when it comes to analyzing trends with droughts, because their impacts on health are often measured indirectly, as well as the lack of a consistent definition.
Next time, we have another great paper on this same topic from the British Medical Journal, and it talks about what it means to be a healthy dry city. So more to come on this.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you so much to all of our listeners. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and we'll see you next time on Be the Expert.